a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
The September 25th, 2012 South Dakota Public Utilities Commission is called to order. We are in Pier, room 413 in the Capitol. Commissioner Hansen is present in the Capitol, Vice Chairman Christy Feagan, and I believe we have Chairman Nelson on the telephone.
On the line, yes.
Very good. We are going to start with roll call. First from Otter Tail, Anthony Harris and Pete Bython.
That's correct. We're here, Commissioner.
Thank you. From Shrek Wind, Talbot Resort.
I'm on, Commissioner.
Tom Malone.
Yes, I'm here.
And from Northwestern, Jeff Decker.
Yes, good morning.
From Long Lines, Paul Bergman.
Present, Commissioner.
Sharon Thomas.
Present.
Joe Shotwell.
Present.
Anthony Isar.
It's Andrew Isar, Commissioner. Good morning, I'm here.
Kaylee Reeves.
Good morning, I'm here.
Ryan Thompson.
Good morning, Commissioner, I'm here.
Thank you. Jim Kramer.
Present, Commissioner, and James Groff, CEO of James Valley Wireless, is also on the line. James, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Great. Thank you. Is there anybody else online we missed? If not, is there a motion to approve the September 11th, 2012 minutes?
Move for approval.
Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Opposed,
aye.
Nay. Commissioner Hansen. Commissioner Nelson.
Aye.
Commissioner Feagan votes aye. Minutes are approved. First of all, we'd like to introduce a brand new staff person to everyone. Kristen Edwards is a new staff attorney, and please join me in welcoming her to our team. I'm sure we'll have lots of great questions for you today.
Thank you.
Welcome to our team. Okay, Deb Gregg, are you ready to give your consumer report in a very slow fashion so I can hear everything?
I am.
And write it all down at the same time?
If not, I got a copy available for you after the meeting.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Commissioner Feagan. The Commission received a total of 80 contacts since the last report was prepared for the September 11th, 2012 Commission meeting. 12 of the contacts involved telecommunication service, 20 of the contacts involved electric service, 8 contacts involved natural gas service, 12 contacts involved cell phone service, 13 contacts related to the Do Not Call registry, 1 contact was related to one call, and 14 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 1,386 of the 1,425 complaints received in 2012 have been resolved.
Thank you. Any questions of the commissioners? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Gray. Our first docket will be an electric docket, EL-12-021, in the matter of petition of Otter Tail Power Company for approval to revise its fuel adjustment clause rider to include emission costs. Otter Tail.
Thank you, Commissioner. What we're proposing here is to withdraw this application. The rules that were promulgated by the federal EPA have been, when I say withdrawn, may not be technically correct, but that's effectively what's happened. So there's no need for this application at this time.
Staff, any other comments?
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer of staff, and staff would recommend dismissing and closing this matter.
Questions of the commission? Seeing none, is there a motion?
Madam Chairwoman, I move that in EL-12-021 that the commission dismiss and close the docket.
Thank you. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson.
Aye.
Commissioner Feagan votes aye. Motion carries. On EL-12-046, in the matter of application of Northern States Power Company, XL Energy, for authority to increase its electric rates.
This would be
So we're going to ask Shrek Wind to Shatek Wind to go first.
Commissioner, this is Talbot Wysorek on behalf of Shatek. We're seeking intervention here. I want the commission to understand the intervention is the issues that we're raising in intervention are fairly straight, narrow focus. They concern production capacity and how that production capacity is treated as a cost to the end consumers in South Dakota. Shatek is a wind generation facility that will be coming online in the next year to 18 months. Wind producer, power generating system, Shatek is not very far from the South Dakota border. South Dakota is one of its natural markets due to the proximity. Shatek is impacted specifically by how rates are set for residential use in South Dakota. If Xcel can, through its rates, pass through capacity, as explained in the reply, double the capacity that they can actually use or put into the system, this impacts the competitiveness of these other power-generating facilities, such as Shatek. This will end up with making these more difficult to produce in the future. More economics will be impacted on it, and this is not distinct to Shatek, but be also an impact on wind projects that potentially could be developed in South Dakota. As stated, though, if we are allowed to intervene, the focus will be on that production issue. This is not a situation that Shatek is looking at, picking at areas beyond that narrow issue that concerns it and adversely impacts it. With that, I'd ask that the commission allow Shatek's intervention. Also, though, on the phone is Thomas Malone. He's an attorney. He is not licensed in the state, so I'm appearing as local counsel. But with the commission's permission, if he's got any additional information on this, he can answer questions, or I would actually defer to him if I've left any holes in that explanation, given his background on the project and information on behalf of the company.
Talbot, I don't have any additional information to add at this time.
All right. Commissioners, then, if you have specific questions, we'd both stand ready to answer those.
Okay. Commissioners, do you have questions here, or do you want to wait until you hear the others? Commissioner Hansen says wait.
No questions.
Okay. Xcel.
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. Carrie Valley on behalf of Xcel Energy. To start, we welcome the involvement of stakeholders in our rate case proceeding. Shatek is simply not a stakeholder in this case. Accordingly, we respectfully request that the Commission deny the petition for intervention. The Commission's rules outline a clear standard for granting intervention as a stakeholder. Shatek does not meet the standard. Shatek is not deemed by statute to be interested in this matter or declared by statute to be an interested party. Further, the outcome of this proceeding does not bind and affect Shatek with respect to an interest peculiar to Shatek as distinguished from an interest common to the public. The issue in this case is the setting of retail rates for our South Dakota customers. Shatek's claim of interest as a developer of a potential wind project is not affected by the setting of retail rates. The concern raised by Shatek is the appropriate rate-making treatment of our Angus Anson facility. Shatek is not a customer and certainly doesn't represent the interests of ratepayers. The interest here, or the concern, is a matter of general ratepayer concern, and that's an interest that's addressed by your staff. By way of background, the company reviewed 143 proposals in response to the RFP for the project that resulted in the Prairie Wind PPA. And the net zero interconnection arrangement was available to all comers. Shatek did not propose a project utilizing an NZI, Prairie Rose did, and accordingly the costs for that contract were lower, and the contract was awarded to Prairie Rose. But under the NZI arrangement, Prairie Rose will utilize the interconnection rights associated with Angus Anson at times that Angus Anson is not using them. Our Angus Anson facility remains fully dispatchable. However, it is a peaking facility. And although it's available 8,760 hours a year, it's not utilized that much. But we have those firm transmission rights. And what this arrangement does is allow Prairie Rose to use those firm interconnection rights to provide low-cost wind energy to our customers at times that Angus Anson is not needed. If there are concerns about the rate-making treatment of this arrangement, it is a ratepayer concerned. Shatec is not a ratepayer, and although it's raised the interests of potential other wind developers out there, certainly Shatec doesn't represent other wind developers or hasn't established how those would be affected by retail rates in South Dakota as well. These issues can and undoubtedly will be addressed by the appropriate party to this proceeding, and that party is the Commission staff. Because Shatec fails to meet the standard for intervention, the company requests that the petition be denied. Thank you.
Commissioners, I'm holding the questions to the end unless you want to ask one of Excel quick. Otherwise, we'll go to staff.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer of staff. Staff has reviewed the filings by both parties, but we believe, much as Excel does, that this issue deals with how Excel accounts for its interconnection costs. That's a FERC matter, in that Shatec does not have it would not be an affected party and does not meet the intervention rules or statutes, and therefore staff would recommend denying the petition to intervene.
Commissioner, questions of all parties? Commissioner Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This commission has historically been pretty liberal on allowing intervention by parties so that everyone has an opportunity to be heard. I'm struggling with this one. I'm looking at two different areas of South Dakota codified law that would open a window or a door slightly. I have a tendency at this point to be agreeing with staff and Excel on this. Wondering if you can tell me in 126-17.1, it points out a person who is not an original party to a contested case and whose pecuniary interest would be directly and immediately affected by an agency's order made upon the hearing may become a party. And I certainly don't see that with Shatec. However, there's a, if you can show me how under 2010.1.15.5, where it states, a petition to intervene shall be granted by the commission if the petitioner shows, and I'll skip a portion of it because I don't believe that you can show those items. The last one is, or that by the outcome of the proceeding, the petitioner will be bound and affected either favorably or adversely with respect to an interest peculiar to the petitioner as distinguished from an interest common to the public or to the taxpayers in general. Can you make that argument?
Yes, Commissioner. I want to go back to this argument that, look, this is a ratepayer issue only. Historically, in front of this commission, that same argument could be made about any intervener, about any type of rate case, or basically almost every regulation. Well, this is really not about these individuals. Of course, there's some benefit potentially to the ratepayer if Shatec comes in and says, hey, they're over-allocating these costs. that's a benefit to the ratepayer, but that doesn't make it only a ratepayer issue. Chautauqua's actually positioned uniquely in that it's got power capacity coming online that it's going to have to market in the area. If there's a situation wherein one of the prominent players in its market is able to push residential rates up so they are actually getting a higher return for their production than they should be, that's an adverse impact to this project. And it discourages these kinds of projects. Now, does that benefit the ratepayers that if we can, through our intervention, focus on that issue and that it brings down rates? Well, certainly it does. But that can be said about almost every intervener that ever occurs in a rate case. If an intervener comes in and says, hey, these rates are overstated, that's going to help the end user if those rates come down. But that doesn't make it an end user only issue. In this situation, too, Xcel's argument, they keep kind of dragging in the FERC stuff. Look, if you look at the reply and if you look at what we've argued today, we're not arguing the FERC issues. We're arguing how this impacts us when we come online to sell our own electricity, not whether we got in on their deal or not. We're arguing how their deal needs to be costed to the end user fairly. So, yes, it might help the end user, but it's unique to our project, to the impact it makes on our project.
Carrie, Ms. Valley, would you like to respond?
Thank you,
Commissioner. I know that you have explained that in a sense already, but I'll give you another shot here.
Thank you, Commissioner Hansen, Commissioner Feagin, and Commissioner Nelson. Certainly, I guess you asked whether Chautauqua met the standard, and they argued that their concern was not only a ratepayer concern. And while we disagree that it's a Chautauqua concern at all with respect to retail rates, it does support the fact that it's not an interest peculiar to Chautauqua. The standard is for intervention that it must be an interest peculiar to them, and certainly that's not the case. It's a general ratepayer concern. And certainly I would disagree that Chautauqua's argument establishes that retail rates setting in South Dakota affect its competitiveness. The PPA in this case with Prairie Rose Wind was a result in an RFP process by which Chautauqua was also a party. They were eligible to take advantage of the NZI arrangement and did not. So certainly their competitiveness with this project and others is an issue outside of the retail rate setting in South Dakota.
Commissioner Hansen.
Yes, go ahead.
I just want to make one point here. Here's Xcel using the word that it's that's a particular interest to the petitioner as being we can be the only impacted party. And that's not how this commission's ever looked at it. If that's true, then we use, for example, telecommunications. If you have a telecommunications rate case where a local carrier was coming in on access rates, no long-distance carrier could intervene because it's not particular to them because there are other long-distance carriers. So to look at it as it has to be a singular only impacting that individual is not how this commission's looked at it, and I don't believe is how the regulation reads.
Ms. Valley, would their intervention adversely affect Xcel?
Commissioner Hansen, the concern here is that their participation raises issues outside the rate case in the setting of retail rates, and it's an issue that can be addressed by your staff. When an entity becomes a party, they are eligible to participate in the evidentiary case process, discovery, and if the issues they raise are not germane or unique to them, it does add a complicating factor and a use of resources of the commission staff time that could be used elsewhere. And we don't think it's appropriate in this case.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Other commission questions?
I have one for Tal or several. It appears that Shatec at this point is a competitor to a supplier to Ectel. And given your argument, it would appear that any competitor anywhere to any supplier to Ectel would be entitled to intervene in a South Dakota rate case. Is that accurate?
It's a fairly broad statement. I'm not sure that, I probably want to look at where the situations are. Shatec's in a kind of a unique situation because it's so close to the South Dakota border, and it will be a competitor. I do think to the extent that somebody can make a showing that how they're treating capacity creates a unfair market force, I do think that would show an interest. I can't say, Commissioner, that I could go as far as to say that every power generating company that might compete with Ectel at some point could make that showing. You know, if you took, I don't think they compete, but let's just say Black Hills Power, was in a situation where it could compete with Ectel. Black Hills Power may not have an impact because its market is so much greater than a smaller project like Shatec. There might be a distinction there.
Well, let's not talk about a direct competitor to Ectel, but let's use an example. I'm talking about a supplier to Ectel, and let's just say a supplier of nuts and bolts. If some supplier of nuts and bolts located elsewhere in the country doesn't like another supplier that's a competitor, given your logic, it appears they would have standing to intervene.
Well, I think it's always, due respect, Commissioner, I think it's always difficult to do an analogy to unregulated industries as to how the rules apply. To the extent that you're looking at a regulated industry, I think that's what makes these things slightly unique, is where you can get competitors. It's not unusual that we get competitors on the telecom intervening all the time.
Talbot?
Yeah.
Could I interject here?
Commissioner?
Oh, certainly, certainly.
Sorry. Thank you. I think on a nuts and bolts example, which is a good one, I think the position of Shatec can be illustrated by saying if that other supplier who's supplying nuts and bolts to Ectel says, look, if you buy my nuts and bolts Ectel, then you also get to charge your ratepayers an additional amount, which you won't be able to get to charge your ratepayers if you buy Shatec's nuts and bolts. And that's really a competitive disadvantage that not properly accounting for the net zero transfer of rights has, is that it prefers the other supplier because Ectel knows they can charge an additional amount to ratepayers that they wouldn't otherwise be able to charge if they took our nuts and bolts. And it's
Thank
that
you.
Additional amount that we're trying to eliminate to level the playing field.
Thank you. No further questions.
Any other questions of the commissioners? See none. Is there action? A motion?
I would move in EL 12-046 that the commission deny intervention to Shatec Wind, Inc.
Any discussion on the motion?
It is an interesting discussion that we've had this morning, and certainly appreciate the briefs from both sides. But I would concur with staff and with Ectel that this particular issue can be adequately addressed by staff as they work through this rate case, and certainly needs to be. No question about that. The fact that Shatec is not a ratepayer and will not be directly affected by the rate that is ultimately set in this case is a pretty moving factor to me in my motion to deny intervention.
Other discussion? Commissioner Hansen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I won't be supporting the motion. It's challenging for me not to, but historically, the commission has been, like I say, extremely liberal in allowing people to be interveners in rate cases. Notwithstanding the excellent arguments that have been made here today from staff, Ms. Kramer, as well as Ms. Valley, I recognize that staff not only can do an adequate job, but does an excellent job in presenting information and representing the citizens of South Dakota. At the same time, those parties who have, I don't know if it's a string, a cable, a rope here of a connection to this, but those parties should be allowed to be a part of the process. We have we've had as many as 80 interveners in the Keystone Pipeline, and that was a situation where there were parties which we could have easily said no to. We, in the interest of just being the most open and receptive of government, we have always allowed people to intervene if there was a glimpse of an interest, and I would like to continue that. The fact that they're not a ratepayer, that weighs a bit, but as was pointed out by Mr. Wysorek, we have in the past, and we've set precedent after precedent, that you don't have to have a peculiar interest as long as you have an interest. And so I won't be supporting the motion.
Other discussion? The motion before the commission is the commission deny the petition to intervene, EL-12-043. Commissioner Hansen?
No.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Feagin votes aye. In EL-12-043, 054 in the matter of petition of Otter Tail Power Company for approval of its 2013 transmission cost recover eligibility and rate adjustment. Otter Tail, would you like to go?
Thank you, Commissioner. On the matter before the commission today, we'll defer to staff.
Staff, are you ready?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner. This is Ryan, so I am part of staff. This is the standard request in the transmission cost recovery rate filings. We're asking the commission to grant the suspension of rates for 180 days from the date of filing, also to order the assessment of the filing fee permitted under SDCL 49-1A-8 be assessed to account for actual expenses incurred during the review of this filing and any necessary expert consulting services, and also to grant the executive director authority to enter any necessary consulting contracts for these expert services if required.
Thank you, Mr. Sawyer. Are there questions of the commission? See none. Is there a motion?
I have a question, if I may.
Yes.
Mr. Sawyer, you said that this is the standard amount that's asked for. Are you familiar with what the actual costs generally are? Do we exceed this? Do you know?
We haven't exceeded this amount, no, and the actual cost will vary depending on the review, and depending on that actual cost, we'll only be requesting to cover those actual expenses incurred.
What's the maximum that we can assess? Do you know that?
SDCL 4901A-8 allows for $50,000 in these cases.
That's maximum?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Other questions of the staff or Otter Tail? Seeing none, is there a motion?
Madam Chair, I'll move that in EL 12-054 that the Commission assess a filing fee in the amount of $50,000 to account for actual expenses incurred in review of this filing commencing from the filing date, and that the Commission suspend the imposition of the tariff for 180 days beyond September 4th, 2012, and that the Commission give the Executive Director authority to enter necessary consulting contracts.
And if you... If you'd be open to a friendly amendment that says to not exceed $50,000?
I believe that's fine. I believe that's max that we could, but anyway, so that's fine. I'll accept that.
Thank you. Other discussion on the motion? See none. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan votes aye. Motion carries. Natural gas, NG 12-005, in the matter of filing of Northwestern Corporation doing business as Northwestern Energy for approval of its tariff revisions. Northwestern Energy.
Good morning. This is Jeff Decker with Northwestern Energy. This is the annual filing we make to adjust our lost and unaccounted gas percentage. This percentage is based on a comparison of purchases to sales for the 12 months ended July 2012. A few examples of the causes of lost and unaccounted gas include gas loss during meter changeouts, hit gas lines, and metering variances. The industry standard for metering variances is 2%. The proposed lost and unaccounted percent for 2012-2013 is 1.77%, and this is down from 1.97% for 2011-2012. Thanks for your consideration, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you. Staff.
Thanks, Commissioner Fegan. This is Patrick Stephenson from staff. On August 24th, 2012, Northwestern Energy filed revisions to their natural gas transportation tariff. This is a compliance filing to annually adjust the retention percentage for the company's South Dakota distribution system. The updates are consistent with past annual filings, and the company has again seen a decrease in the lost and unaccounted for gas percentage. Staff recommends approval of the tariff changes. Thank you.
Questions of the commission? Is there a motion?
I would move an NG 12-005 that the commission approve the tariff revisions.
Is there discussion for Northwestern? Just thank you so much for sharing, of course, the percentages, and it's always nice to see when the percentages go down each year. So it appears that your technology is getting better in recovering your gas. Any other questions of the commission? See none. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan votes aye. Motion carries.
All right, thank you.
Telecommunication dockets. The first one up is TC 12-078, in the matter of the request of Long Lines Wireless, LLC, for the certification regarding the use of Federal Universal Services. Do we want to go to Long Line Wireless first?
Yes. Good morning, Commissioner. This is Paul Bergman with Long Lines Wireless. We are seeking certification regarding the use of the Federal Universal Support. On our original application, there was an error on our part providing Lifeline service support. We have since corrected this, and Long Lines Wireless will provide Lifeline support to all of its existing and future customers. We will send out the necessary annual letters along with Lifeline application to all of its customers. We will put notification of this Lifeline program availability in the local papers and radio stations. We will inform all new Long Lines customers within 30 days of the Lifeline Assistance Program availability. We will also have the Lifeline Assistance Program on the Long Lines Wireless website. I believe this corrects our original application and asking for your approval and certification. Thank you.
Thank you, staff.
Thank you, Commissioner Vegan. This is Brian Rounds for staff. Staff simply recommends providing certification of the FCC and USAC.
Any questions of the commissioners? See none. Is there a motion?
Madam Chair, I'll move that in TC-12-078 that the Commission provide a certification to the Federal Communications Commission and to the USA Company regarding the plan for the use of Federal Universal Service Support as proposed.
Any discussion on the motion? See none. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan votes aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
In TC-12-102, this docket has been in front of us a lot this summer. On the parties, would you like to give a brief comment, or would you like to just take commissioners' questions? Darla Lyons is approaching the microphone. Darla Rogers, sorry. Go ahead, Ms. Rogers.
Thank you. If you would permit it, I think I would like to make just a couple of responses to the filing of staff.
Sure, go ahead.
Mid-State Telecom has submitted three written filings in this docket to date, and we believe that we have at one point or another addressed most of the points raised by staff in this and its prior filing. I would, however, like to take a moment to highlight or respond to just a few things. First of all, I want to look at the December 6th, 2011 meeting because I think it exemplifies and demonstrates the confusion from a regulatory perspective that took place in this docket and surrounding dockets. I also want to respond to some of the comments concerning the FCC order and finally a couple of the points raised by staff with regard to the filed rate doctrine. My mom always told me that hindsight is 20/20, and I'm not sure about the accuracy of the 20/20 part, but I can assure you that Mid-State Telecom would certainly change some of its actions in related dockets had it known then what it knows now. I have already discussed more than once the regulatory confusion that has occurred during the course of the last several months. We had docket RM05002, wherein the Commission adopted rules addressing CLEC access rates. The confusion was then compounded by the FCC's 11161 order, and I think that there is evidence of the confusion at this Commission's December 6, 2011 meeting, and I would like to look at that meeting just for a minute. At that meeting, Mid-State Telecom's cost study docket, which was 11075, was on the agenda. The stated issue at that meeting was whether the Commission should authorize the executive director to hire a consultant to analyze cost studies, and that was both Mid-State Telecom and Fort Randall. One of the discussion points was, where was this docket going in light of the fact that the FCC had just capped intrastate access rates in FCC 11161. One commissioner also questioned whether things were in proper form as to filings, and specifically whether things were properly filed so that when the freeze became effective at the end of the month, there would be no ambiguity as to what the rate was as to Mid-State Telecom and Fort Randall. I'm really not sure that we met that goal, but the subsequent discussion among Commission Counsel, staff, and the affected companies was that there would be no ambiguity because the rates were on file in both companies' tariffs, and nothing further had been filed to change that. With regard to Mid-State, there was no effective date of different rates in its tariff, and on behalf of Mid-State Telecom, there were no revised rates filed. Staff states in its recent filing, December 6, 2011, staff informs Midstate Telecom it must file revised switched access tariffs to reflect the switched access rates currently being charged. In the confusion of that meeting, Midstate Telecom did not hear or understand that instruction from staff on December 6, 2011. Quite frankly, when I went back and listened to that meeting, I did not hear it on September 24th of 2012. Staff sought confirmation from Midstate Telecom that there was no commission-approved tariff on file for Midstate Telecom reflecting the RBOC rate, which was and is true. It appears now, with this recent filing, that staff believed it was instructing Midstate Telecom to revise its tariff to reflect the lower RBOC rate. But from Midstate's perspective, why would staff so instruct Midstate Telecom? Was staff saying that even though you filed a cost study that supports a higher rate, you should also revise your tariff rate to reflect the RBOC rate? Then what's the point of the cost study? Staff commented that all other companies had revised their tariff pages to implement the RBOC rate, which Midstate Telecom does not believe was an accurate statement, as there were other CLECs that did not file a cost study and did not file revised tariff pages to reflect the RBOC rate. Nevertheless, the point Midstate Telecom made at that meeting is that Midstate Telecom's situation was different than any other CLEC because it had filed a cost study. Midstate Telecom advised the commission and staff that its tariff would be revised when the commission ruled on the cost study. Therein was part of the confusion. If staff truly believed that Midstate Telecom should have revised its tariff rate down to the RBOC rate, that ignores 2010-2701.02, which rule afforded CLECs the opportunity to provide evidence of a higher rate through a cost study. Midstate Telecom went to great expense to comply with that rule. Why then would Midstate Telecom, at the same time it filed a cost study, revise its tariff down to the RBOC rate when Midstate Telecom believed that its cost study supported a higher rate? And why would staff have instructed Midstate Telecom to do so? It was a confusing proceeding. The confusion was not alleviated by any follow-up letters or guidance or written requests from staff for Midstate Telecom to revise its tariff to the RBOC rate or to revise its tariff pages at all. The guidance Midstate Telecom heard staff give was that Midstate Telecom should charge its tariffed rates, which is accurate and sound advice, and Midstate followed that directive. In this confusing process, if Midstate Telecom made mistakes, did not file something staff believed it should have, did not charge rates staff believed it should have, we apologize for that. There was no intent to deceive or manipulate, and Midstate Telecom felt it was truly trying to comply with the requirements and requests and to cooperate with staff. The confusion didn't end on December 6th, but in fact became exacerbated by subsequent efforts to deal with compliance of the FCC order. Staff hired a consultant to analyze Midstate's cost study, and those costs were assessed to Midstate Telecom per statute. But herein is another confusing issue. Staff then encouraged, or again, Midstate Telecom certainly interpreted that staff was encouraging Midstate Telecom to withdraw its comments or its cost study. And that came about as a result of comments and email messages that the docket was really going to get expensive. And did Midstate Telecom want to withdraw the study before being served with extensive data requests from staff? What staff did not indicate to Midstate Telecom was staff's interpretation of what it believed would be the effect of withdrawing the cost study on a transitional rate filing, which Midstate Telecom clearly indicated it was going to be filing. And that is where the hindsight kicks in. Had Midstate Telecom had some inkling of staff's position that by withdrawing the cost study, Midstate Telecom's originating and terminating switched access rates would automatically become the RBOC rate, and that the clock would roll back and that rate would become effective retroactively to May of 2011, Midstate Telecom would not have withdrawn the cost study. Midstate Telecom believed it was being encouraged by staff to withdraw the study, but for what reason? At that time, Midstate Telecom thought it was because terminating access rates were governed by the new FCC order, and originating access rates were also arguably capped by that order, so the significance of the higher cost study rate was affected by the order. Right, wrong, or otherwise, Midstate Telecom anticipating filing the transitional rate and negotiating an appropriate originating rate with staff. In hindsight, the reason for staff's interpretation of the effect of withdrawal of its cost study appears to be so Midstate Telecom can be penalized in this docket, but we had no way of knowing that at the time. If that was where staff was going, should that not have been stated and discussed? Midstate Telecom stated its intentions and reasons for withdrawal of the study up front. In the letter requesting withdrawal of the study, Midstate Telecom stated it was making the request in light of the FCC's recently ordered reforms to intercarrier compensation and that it anticipated filing a transitional rate filing, which in fact it did within a month. Staff's only comment at the meeting when the docket was closed was to concur and recommend that the commission close the docket. It is Midstate Telecom's position that staff is now asking this commission to interpret the rule imposing the RBOC rate in isolation, that is, ignoring the cost study part of the rule, and in a manner that contravenes other state statutes and rules, the FCC 11161 order, and the filed rate doctrine. Midstate Telecom did not anticipate that, and for this commission to do what staff is requesting results in inequitable regulation of Midstate Telecom. We are asking for an interpretation that conforms to existing law and statutes and that is reasonable and equitable to this company. Midstate Telecom does not want to be punished as a result of the confusion that has plagued this docket. With regard to legal arguments, I'm not going to reiterate prior points made supporting Midstate Telecom's legal position, but I would just like to comment on three additional points. First of all, staff argued that the Commission's CLEC rules have not been preempted by the FCC 11161 order because the Commission's rules establishing the RBOC rate are consistent with and promote federal rules and policies. Midstate Telecom does not necessarily agree with that argument, however, because the FCC 11161 order did recognize and preserve the rural exemption for rural competitive LECs by permitting them to benchmark the access rates prescribed in the NECA access tariff, assuming the highest rate band for local switching, and that's in paragraph 807 of the order. There is nothing in the Commission's CLEC rules that recognizes the increased costs incurred by rural CLECs. But furthermore, and maybe more to the point, I don't believe that preemption is really the issue in this docket. The FCC clearly prescribed a methodology as to what the terminating access rate should be. The method was established notwithstanding any other provision of the order, and that's stated in Section 51, 199. That order became effective 30 days after it was adopted, and the methodology for calculation of terminating intrastate access rates established in that order must be followed by companies and by this commission. With regard to the filed rate doctrine, I believe we've discussed that pretty extensively and also briefed it, but I would like to respond to two points made by staff in its filing. First, staff makes a distinction between the rates in effect versus the rates on file. We don't believe that that distinction is supported by case law. I would quote from the FirstCom Inc. versus Quest Corporation case. Under the filed rate doctrine, courts may not award relief that would have the effect of imposing any rate other than reflected in the filed tariff. Staff also states, and I did not find any legal authority for this in its filing, that the filed rate doctrine is in direct conflict with the Commission's rules and therefore need not be followed. In the Verizon versus Covon case, however, the court said that, quote, no party may bring a judicial proceeding to enforce any rate other than the rate established by the filed tariff. These rules are binding upon the actions of a state commission as well, and I would refer you to Alliance Communications Cooperative Inc. versus Global Crossing, wherein the court stated that the filed rate doctrine is applicable to rates filed with state regulatory agencies. In its recitation of facts, staff states that on December 29, 2011, that's the date used by CLEX that have a tariff on file with state regulatory authorities for calculation of transitional filing. I would remind you that Midstate Telecom is a CLEX with a tariff on file with the Commission. It is Midstate Telecom's tariffed rate on file with the State Commission on December 20th, 2011 that is required to be used in its transitional rate filing calculation per the FCC's order. There can be no dispute that the only approved tariff on file for Midstate Telecom as of December 29, 2011 had an 11.5 cent rate. There is no other commission order approving any other rate. That tariff is thus prima facie evidence of the validity and legality of that tariff per SDCL 4931.12.1. Any tariff approved pursuant to 4931.12.5 shall be received in evidence as an official tariff on file with the commission without further proof. Staff is requesting that this commission disapprove Midstate Telecom's filing in this docket and to require Midstate Telecom to resubmit its transitional rate calculation using a starting rate of the RBOC rate, which is not Midstate Telecom's tariffed rate as of December 29, 2011. To arrive at that request, staff asks you to ignore the FCC order and the clear dictates of the filed rate doctrine, both as to the rate imposed and also as to the date of imposition, i.e. retroactively. I would give you a quote from the Wiegeland versus NYNEX Corporation, which provides, the legal rights with respect to rates are controlled by and limited to the rates filed and approved by the appropriate regulatory agency, and any attempt to reassess the reasonableness of rates would require the judiciary to reconstitute the whole rate strategy of the industry. Any retroactive relief would also violate the filed rate doctrine. Midstate Telecom believes following staff's recommendation will, in addition to being contrary to the Commission's and federal existing rules, statutes, and settled case law, result in inequitable regulation of Midstate Telecom. We urge you to resist staff's position.
I'm going to hold questions until if the staff would like to have a brief comment.
Thank you, and I'll take you at your word when you say brief, that you mean brief. As to the December 6th conversation, that took place after the meeting based on Midstate's comments that it was charging the RBOC rate, and staff merely pointed out to Ms. Rogers, and I believe Mr. Van Camp was there too, but I'm not going to pull him into this unnecessarily, and we simply told them that you have to file tariffs that must be filed to reflect the rate being charged. It was that simple. Staff is not looking to penalize Mid-State. We're just merely requesting that they be treated the same as all other CLECs in this state. There's no reason for them to be treated differently. Staff believes everything it needs to say has been stated probably more than once, and it will not repeat it at this time. Staff is available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner, questions?
I have one, if I might.
Commissioner Nelson.
For Darla, and I want to thank both sides for your additional filings. This was very helpful to me. And just one question, Darla, from your filing on page 13, paragraph 22, second to the last sentence, the last phrase you say, because its rates are capped and state regulations no longer apply to terminating switched access services after December 31st, 2011. That's a pretty broad statement, and as I tried to very carefully pick through those rules and through the commentary of the order, you know, I found ample evidence that the FCC has placed caps on rates, but I don't know that I found the evidence to support the broad statement that state regulations no longer apply. Could you address that and give me some support for your broad statement?
I apologize, Commissioner Nelson. I don't have that filing right in front of me, but I believe what I was relying on was the section in that order that specifically confers or says that state regulatory jurisdiction would continue with regard to originating intrastate access rates, but there is no correlating statement that says that it would continue with regard to terminating intrastate access rates. The other thing that I am relying on is what I said today, and that is the FCC order specifically set forth a methodology for determining and calculating the terminating access rates. And so that methodology, what it says is you take the tariffed rate as of December 29, 2011, and then you go through this calculation for the first step down in the overall process of transitioning, terminating access rates to bill and keep. And that filing was to take effect as of July 1, 2011. And so the way I interpret that is that because the FCC order did not explicitly retain or confer jurisdiction over terminating rates to state commissions, and because they implemented a methodology that set out the time frame for this overall and long-range plan to transition terminating access rates, that is really the FCC order that now governs what happens to terminating access rates.
Thank you. No further questions.
Other questions of the commission?
I have a question.
Rolaine.
Ms. Rogers, I understand, at least I understand your arguments with respect to confusion on terminating, but when Mid-State withdrew its cost study and it was approved in June, there was no confusion on originating rates, was there? Mid-State should have filed to reduce its rates to the Quest rate.
And, Commissioners, in response to that question, I think that we anticipated, and I thought I tried to make that clear, that we would then go down the path of negotiating with staff and saying this is the appropriate originating rate for Mid-State Telecom. We would urge you at this point to review Mid-State Telecom's refiled cost study, because we've tried to correct what we perceive now as perhaps a mistake in withdrawing that study. We would not have pulled that old study if we had known staff's position with regard to the effect of doing so. So we continue to believe that the study demonstrates that costs could be even above the 11.5 cent rate, depending upon how we interpret the cap. We are willing to make adjustments to originating rates as the commission deems appropriate back to the date of withdrawal of the filed cost study, not beyond that date. And that is what we assumed we would have been negotiating with staff, and was part of the motivation of withdrawing the cost study.
So you don't disagree that once you withdrew your cost study, your originating rates would have gone down to the Quest rate?
I believe that that's part of the process of analyzing the originating rates, and if that is the case, we will make adjustments or credits as deemed appropriate.
But once you withdrew your cost study, you know, you refiled it recently, but in June it was gone. So why didn't your rates go down to, and instead you filed a brand new access tariff that had 11.5 for originating? I don't understand any confusion there as to what originating rates would have been when you filed your brand new access tariff. Why were you using 11.5 at that point?
Because that's what our tariff rate was.
You filed a brand new access tariff with originating rates, and you kept them at the 11.5, notwithstanding that you had withdrawn your cost study. What is the confusion with originating rates?
We believed that the originating rates, despite withdrawal of the cost study, were still low under the RBOC rate. But again, to the extent that that is not the case, we are certainly willing to adjust and give any credits with regard to those originating rates for those months.
I think it certainly shows that the FCC order that they gave us November 18th of 2011, 752 pages, is frustrating for all of us in trying to comprehend it and trying to get our arms around it. And there's different things that we look at every day. And when I look at origination, I believe that it does need to be down to the 6.042%. But the terminating on December 29th, your filed tariff was 11.5, and that's what we have to look at today. So when I look at this docket, and it's been very confusing this whole time, it appears to me we need to look at the transitional rate on the terminating from 11.5 and then your transitional, but of course originating, we need to go back to that RBOC rate of 6.042. Other discussion or questions by the commission? See none. Is there a motion?
I would move in TC 12-102 that the commission approve Mid-State's transitional terminating access rates as filed in this docket. The FCC's order effective December 29th, 2011, used as the basis for the transitional rate, the intrastate terminating rate that was in effect on December 29th, 2011. I believe that rate was the 11.5 cent rate as filed in Mid-State's tariff. However, Mid-State's new tariff also reflects an originating intrastate access rate of 11.5 cents. This rate is not consistent with the Commission's rules regarding access rates. Therefore, I move that Mid-State be required to refile this tariff with the originating rate corrected to 6.042 cent rate effective as of the date that cost study was withdrawn. I further move that the Commission grant the waiver of rules requiring equal originating and terminating rates as requested by Mid-State.
Discussion on the motion.
I think, you know, we've had great input on both sides. I've picked through this very, very carefully, weighed a lot of the evidence, and to me,
this is the right answer. I believe 11.5 cents was the rate that was in the tariff and in effect on December 29, 2011, and has to be used for calculating the transitional rate. I did struggle as to what the proper terminating rate should be from June 5th to July 1st, and whether that would impact this particular motion. But at this point, I'm comfortable with this. But as Rolaine has talked about, we do need to look at the originating rate. It's very clear that when that cost study was removed, that or withdrawn, that that originating rate had to go down to the 6.042 as required by our rules, and hence that part of the motion.
Other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan votes aye. Motion carries. I don't think we're done with the FCC in that order, and I think it'll take years to get sort through all of that and the frustration it has caused South Dakota consumers and actually their companies. We are moving to TC-12-104 in the matter of the filing of WiMAX Communication Corp. for approval of revisions to its tariff number 2. WiMAX.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is Sharon Thomas. WiMAX filed on June 28th of this year a revision to its access tariff, which was intended to incorporate the requirements of the FCC order number 11161, which you've been discussing, with respect to both the level of access rates and the treatment of toll void PSTN traffic. AT&T subsequently filed a petition to intervene, which was granted, and the tariff was suspended. The parties did, have some communications in an effort to resolve the concerns raised by AT&T, but we basically came to an impasse. And so in an effort to avoid, expending resources, the commissions as well as the companies, WiMAX decided to withdraw the tariff and intends to subsequently file another tariff revision to ensure that its rates are consistent with the FCC requirement. And in fact, WiMAX had proposed and will propose again to set both its originating and terminating rates at the Quest at its interstate rate levels, which are equal to the CenturyLink rates.
Thank you. Staff?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Chris Dugard for staff. Staff recommends the Commission do dismiss and close the docket. We also have the understanding that WiMAX will file for a new docket in the near future that will at least simply address rate changes so that they come into compliance with the FCC's ICC reform. And we did visit with the company to make sure that we were on the same page with regard to that. And also, it's our understanding that those are CenturyLink interstate rates that you're going to come into, I guess that you're going to mirror, correct, Sharon?
Yes, that's correct. I mean, they're actually WiMAX's interstate rates, but those are the same as CenturyLink's interstate rates, yes.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Questions, discussion, or a motion of the commission? Oh, I'm sorry. AT&T.
That's quite all right, Commissioner. Bill Van Camp, AT&T Communications of the Midwest, who is a party in this docket. I am encouraged that WiMAX has agreed to file new tariff pages to address some of the concerns that we might have. We did file a brief statement with the Commission, not objecting to the withdrawal, simply stating that reverting back to the tariff that it is on file does not necessarily make all the provisions of that tariff valid. If WiMAX would like to come back before the Commission and make a subsequent filing, we can approach this matter yet again, but I agree with WiMAX that resources are better served right now going in another direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, questions, discussion, or a motion by the Commission?
Madam Chair, in TC-12-104, I move that the Commission dismiss and close the docket.
Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, I'll vote aye. Opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan votes aye. Motion carries. Okay, the next docket is TC-12-115 in the matter of filing of Local Exchange Carriers Association, Inc. for approval of revisions of its Access Service Tariff Number 1. Ms. Rogers.
Thank you, Commissioners. I would just state that LECA originally filed revisions to its tariff to comply with the FCC order. I think we were the last docket in 2011. When the second order of reconsideration was handed down on April 25, 2012, it required us to once again revise our VoIP tariff language. So we have done that in this docket. We've responded to some questions from staff, and we believe that the tariff is ready for approval. I would ask that you would do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Darla Rogers. Staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Chris Dugard for staff. Staff has reviewed the filing and also the responses to staff's data request. We are satisfied that this is a good filing. It does take into account the language in the second order on reconsideration. And additionally, it removed some language that staff was uncomfortable with somewhat in the first revision. And so we are very very satisfied with this filing. We recommend that the Commission do approve the proposed revisions. Thank you.
Questions of the Commission or action?
I would move in TC-12-115 that the Commission approve the proposed tariff revisions.
Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor vote aye. Opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan votes aye. Motion carries. TC-12-120 in the matter of filing of Granite Telecommunication, LLC, for the approval of revisions of its Access Service Tariff Number 3. Granite Communication.
This is Andrew Isar, providing non-legal representation for Granite Telecommunications. This is the second of a two-part filing to implement the provisions of the FCC's USF Intercarrier Compensation Transformation Order. The instant filing deals specifically with provisions applicable to imposing access charges on voice over internet protocol, public telephone switch network traffic. And I'm available for questions.
Staff.
Thank you, Commissioner. I don't really have anything to add. We did ask for some further clarifying language in the tariff, and that was done by the company. We would recommend approval.
Questions, and Rolaine has a question.
Question for Granite. I know you've implemented the rates, the new rates for the July 13, 2012, but you don't have, it's my understanding, just reading through it, you don't have an ending date, so you're going to be refiling next year, I mean, to end the rate by the 2014 date at some point?
Barring any further amendments from the FCC, that's correct.
And the other question I had would be on the issue date and the effective date. I mean, the issue date is July 26th and the effective date is July 13th. Usually we have, you know, ones that, especially when they talk about decreasing rates effective on one day's notice. I don't see why there would be any problem given how you've done the language in the, with respect to the upon the effective date of the rule and until the effective date. Would you have any problem with changing that effective date until July 27th? The effective date?
If so directed, I view this more as an administrative matter than anything else. Well, excuse me. Yes, we would be glad to make the changes. I mean,
It would just be my reading that it wouldn't really affect how you would have to charge for that, given how you've written the changes into the tariff.
Indeed, and if so directed, we'll make those changes.
Did staff have any objection to that?
Can you put your mic on?
Are you talking about the transitional rate?
Yes.
That was approved in DACA TC 119?
Yes, but there's still language in, I mean, it still has the effective July 13th date, right?
Okay.
For all the tariff pages.
Because the primary changes in this DACA were just the VoIP language, not the
right, and I just had a problem with the effective date being after the issue date.
I understand.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
My recollection is that was because of additional language amendments that we were requested to make.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions, discussion, and or action of the commission? Commissioner Hansen.
Ms. Weiss, what date were you recommending, July 27 as the effective date?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I'll move in TC 12-120 that the Commission approve the proposed tariff revisions with an effective date of July 27.
Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan votes aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
In TC 12-122, in the matter of the application of Spanish Conecto for the certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange long-distance services in South Dakota. Can you pronunciate your name of your company?
Yes. Conectado.
Conectado. Thank you. Conectado.
Yes. Conectado. This is Kaylee Reeves calling from Law Office of Lance Steinhardt. We're providing legal counsel for Conectado, who filed an application for a certificate of authority on August 2nd, 2012. Conectado filed responses to Commission State of Request number 1 on September 6th and number 2 on September 7th. As requested in Data Request number 2, Conectado did register as a solicitor in South Dakota and is in compliance with the Do Not Call rules until September 30th, 2013.
Staff.
Thank you, Chairwoman Fegan. This is Pat Stephenson of staff. On August 2nd, 2012, Conectado, Inc. filed an application for a certificate of authority to provide interexchange services in South Dakota, according to the Commission's administrative rules. Staff recommends the Commission grant the certificate of authority to Conectado, Inc. with the following conditions. 1. Conectado is not to offer any prepaid services, including prepaid calling cards. 2. Conectado is not to accept or require deposits or advance payments without prior approval from the Commission. And 3. The Commission grant the requested waiver of ARSD 20:10:24:2:9, as Conectado does not compile a cash flow statement. And thank you.
Questions of the Commission? Is there a motion?
Madam Chair, I will move in TC 12-122 that the Commission grant the COA to Conectado Incorporated under the conditions articulated by staff.
Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan votes aye. Motion carries. In the docket TC 12-128, in the matter of approval of an inter-carrier compensation bill and keep amendment to an interconnection agreement between SANCOM, Inc., Mitchell Telecom, doing business as Mitchell Telecom, and the City of Brookings Municipal Utilities Telephone Division, Swiftel Communication. Would the parties like to go?
Yeah, good morning, Commissioner. This is Ryan Thompson, manager of SANCOM, and I guess in the interest of this matter, I'll probably defer to staff, but certainly be available for any questions.
Thank you, staff.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer of staff. The amendment was properly filed, properly executed, and does not appear to contain discriminatory provisions. No comments were filed. Staff recommends the Commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement.
Questions, discussion, or a motion of the Commission?
I would move in TC 12-122. 128, that the Commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement.
Discussion on the motion.
Well, Madam Chair, I would like to hold my breath and pout and huff and puff, but it won't do any good. The FCC will have its way, and we will still have to go with Bill and Keep. So, regrettably, I will support.
I think we're all frustrated with the FCC order and the Bill and Keep. Any other discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor, vote aye. Opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan votes aye. Motion carries. And TC-12-130, in the matter of approval of the intercarrier compensation Bill and Keep amendment to an interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation, doing business as CenturyLink, QC, and Verizon Wireless. Parties, I'm not for sure who would like to go first, but go ahead.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer of staff, and I spoke to the people from CenturyLink, and they have meetings today and will not be on the phone. However, they have no issues with this filing, and that would pertain to both 130 and 132, and staff would just state that the amendment was properly filed, properly executed, and does not appear to contain discriminatory provisions. No comments were filed, and staff would recommend the Commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement.
Questions, discussion, or a motion of the Commission? In TC-12-130, move that the Commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all in favor vote aye. Opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan votes aye. Motion carries. TC-12-131, in the matter of the filing of approval of a reciprocal transport and termination agreement between Interstate Telecommunication Cooperative and James Valley Wireless. Parties in the case. Do you want to?
Yeah, Commissioner Jim Kramer. I'm an attorney in Aberdeen with Vance Gosch and Kramer, and I represent James Valley Wireless. And on the phone with me is James Groff, the CEO of James Valley Wireless. What you have before you is the approval of the reciprocal interconnection transport and termination agreement between James Valley Wireless and ITC. The reason this is before you is because Section 252 of the Telecommunications Act requires State Commission approval of interconnection agreements that were adopted by negotiation, which is the case here. And under Section 252, the State Commission is to approve the interconnection agreement unless it finds that it discriminates against a telecommunications carrier who is not a party to the agreement, or that the implementation of the agreement is not consistent with public interest, convenience, and necessity. Neither of those grounds exist in this case. There were no interveners, no objections to this. So I would ask the Commission to approve this agreement, but James Groff and I would stand by in the event you have questions.
Thank you for standing by for the last hour and a half about for us. Questions of the Commission? Hearing none, is there discussion or a motion? Commissioner Hansen.
Madam Chair, I'll move in TC-12-131 that the Commission approve the reciprocal interconnection transport and termination agreement.
Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor vote aye. Opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan votes aye. Motion carries. And our last docket of the day, TC-12-132, in the matter of the filing of approval of the ICC VoIP amendment to the interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation, doing business as CenturyLink, QC, and Broadvex CLX, LCC of the state of South Dakota. Parties in the case. Staff has already talked about this a little bit, but go ahead.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer of staff. The amendment was properly filed, properly executed, and does not appear to contain discriminatory provisions. No comments were filed. Staff recommends the Commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement. Thank you.
Questions of the Commission? And our action.
I move in TC-12-132 that the Commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement.
Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all in favor vote aye. Opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan votes aye. Motion carries. Today, I believe, is the last day of Ryan Soy and Ross Peterson, and the chair is empty at Ryan Soy, but we are very thankful for what you've done for the commission and the consumers of South Dakota. You guys have both worked very, very hard. We wish you the very best in your next endeavor. Come back and visit us, and please join me in a round of applause for both of them. There are several items, announcements that are posted on our website, on our agenda. Our next meeting is scheduled for, is it October 8th? No, October 23rd?
No, it should be the 9th.
October 9th, there it is. October 9th is the next scheduled meeting, and then we meet October 23rd and November 6th. Any other business of the commission?
Move to adjourn.
It's a motion to adjourn. All in favor vote aye. Opposed nay. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan votes aye. The September 25th meeting of the Public Utilities Commission is so adjourned.